everybody. Welcome back to the Memories of Dallas show, part of the Memories, Inc. network of shows. This is a show where we talk about all the people, places, and things related to Big D, Dallas, Texas. Today, my guest is a former Californian turned Dallasite. From his days winning Olympic track gold to victory over leukemia and subsequent nonprofit work, Earl Young has led a life of consequence. I will introduce you to him right after this. Memories of Dallas is made possible through the generous support of Toothacres Pet Care Center. Toothacres is located in Carrollton, Texas at 1639 Parker Road. Toothacres Pet Care Center provides the finest indoor and outdoor boarding environment for your pet. With over 45 years of experience, the Clem family has created and maintained the highest level of excellence in the pet care industry. And they do it because they're pet owners too. For all your boarding needs, choose Toothacres. Toothacres offers cat and dog boarding as well as cremation and burial. You can reach them on the phone at 972-492-3711 or go to toothacres.com. And when you go, be sure to thank Lori Clem and the entire staff at Toothacres for supporting Memories of Dallas.
Earl Verdell Young. It's good middle name.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, Earl grew up in Sacramento. Now, your dad was a radiator shop repair owner, right?
Actually, I grew up in San Fernando.
In San Fernando? Oh, okay.
Fernando Valley.
So how'd you like living there?
First 17 years of my life, I thought that's the way the world was supposed to be. sadly, it's not, and San Fernando is not what it used to be. So that was a great kickoff to life, no question about that.
Uh-huh. All right. Now, you went to school and everything there at San Fernando High School, right?
Right. Right.
What was it like around San Fernando? Was it all city or country or what at that time?
No, actually, San Fernando when I grew up was much different than it is today.
Uh-huh.
And graffiti was not a prominent item back then.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up where there were still a lot of orange orchards and new homes. The highways, everything was new, and we lived out past the sidewalk. We lived out in the country where you could have horses, and actually an area called Sylmar now.
Okay.
And right up against the mountains, so it was a great beginning to life.
So when you got to Texas, you were kind of familiar with a little bit about what was going on. A little wildlife, little horses, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but I wasn't prepared for Abilene, Texas. Come on.
Nobody's prepared for Abilene.
No. And in the day, it was certainly not San Fernando, California. Matter of fact, we went out there caravan style, three cars, uh-huh. And got down at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
To one of the dormitories there at Abilene Christian and slept on the couch and got up with the sun the next morning. Walked outside, and I know I said, God, what have I done? You know, I had never been there before, and it was Spartan, to say the least.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. You know, we'll get into a little bit later on, but I played football down at Texas A&I. So,
right.
Okay. And you know, at Texas A&I, you know what the Kingsville's like. Just about as flat as can be, and then you get to Abilene, and it's not that dissimilar, I guess you could say.
Probably not.
So, what was your favorite sport as a kid?
Oh, I played some baseball, and I would say that baseball and running. And back then, you didn't organize as much as you do today. You just played, just enjoyed life.
Right.
So I enjoyed all sports.
So were you the fastest kid in the neighborhood all the time?
Yeah, pretty much from the beginning. That seemed to be something that I noticed early on. That was always a way to get some praise and be recognized, just outrun others.
Yeah, stick out for the girls, and it's all that stuff, too, you know.
Yeah, I don't know that was
It didn't hurt.
No, it didn't hurt.
So now you're in high school. Now you've already run like a 10 flat 100 in high school. I mean, when you think about it, that's blazing. Of course, we're talking about the 100 yard at this particular time.
Yeah,
you had a 21.6 and a 249.6 and a 440. All of these were in yards. Now, what was amazing to me is that you really weren't recruited by some of the Cali student colleges.
Well, like you said, my best time was 49.6, which is not a bad 400 meters or 440 for high school, but in Southern California, that's just kind of one of the guys.
Yeah.
And if I'd have been in Texas or somewhere else, I might have been recognized more. But I was only 17 years old, had a lot of growing to do.
How tall were you then?
I was 6 foot in high school, but okay. I grew four more inches total.
Wow.
But you know, the difference between 17 and 18 in my 400 meters or 440, they're basically the same distance. I was 49.6 in high school, but 3 years later, I was 46.6.
Well, before we get into that, because that's a part of your next story there, tell me about your grandma picking your college for you.
Yeah, I didn't find that out till after it happened. But the beginning of that story is I was sitting in class in high school, so May of 58, and getting ready to graduate. Probably would have gone on to Occidental, actually, and they had a great at the time and showed some interest in me. But a message came from the registrar's office to come down and call my dad. I did. And dad said, Bobby Morrow and Oliver Jackson are here in my office. So take us to lunch. Can you get out of school? Well, the way I would explain who Bobby Morrow was to younger listeners today would be that it's like Tiger Woods wants to take you to lunch. Bobby was a 3 gold medalist from the Olympics in Melbourne. He was on the cover of everything, known worldwide, and was my hero in high school as far as the runner's concerned. And so I hopped in my 55 Chevy and scooted up there to Dad's office, and sure enough, there was Bobby Morrow.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know who the guy was with him, but it was Oliver Jackson, his coach, who was to become what my dad called my second dad, and he really was a great man. And he described that.
He was the one that coached Bobby Morrow to those gold medals, wasn't he?
That's correct.
Oh, wow.
Great coach. And Abilene Christian to a number of world records. And, he was an awesome coach during his day.
Wow.
So he explained Abilene to me in unfair terms, as I was to find out. And offered me a scholarship, a way to go to school. And so I said, you bet. And I have to find out a few months later that my grandmother had written him a letter and said, hey, I've got a grandson who's been raised in the Church of Christ, which was important back then to Abilene Christian.
Right.
But I've been raised in the Church of Christ and could run a pretty fair 400. Could he help me go to school? That's how it all started.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, pretty amazing.
I'm still trying to get over that with your long legs that you ran a 10 flat and 100.
Well, they helped and they hindered. You know, it took a while to get them back. Yeah. That's why I had 400.
It's just getting going.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh. So you get up there to Abilene Christian, and most folks, when they talk about, man, I messed up or whatever, they shoot themselves in the foot. But Earl had to be different. He was goofing around in the wilds of West Texas and forgot to put his .22 back on safety after shooting rabbits and shoots himself in the right calf. Tell me that story.
That's one way to tell the story. Come on. It was my freshman year. I'd been in Abilene a couple months, I guess. And my roommate lived out in Merkel, a little town just west of Abilene. Uh-huh. And he said, hey, let's go rabbit hunting. Well, great, you know. So we went out at night with a light in the car from the road, everything wrong, you know. But I pointed the pistol out to shoot a skunk, actually, and Ronnie's dad was in the back seat and says, hey, better not shoot out there. There's cattle out there in that field. It might ricochet and hit a man's cow. So I brought it back in the window and pointed at the floor, and we heard a loud boom. And I looked over at Ronnie and I said, "Man, you won't believe what I just did." He said, "You shoot yourself?" I said, "Yep." And as it turned out, the hollow point was headed right towards the bone and made a U and came out right beside the bone.
Oh,
like
gosh.
It just... Yeah, like it was directed to not hit that bone. So I was very fortunate, very fortunate.
If it had been a solid point, that would have shattered your leg, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have shattered the calf. Yeah, I'm sure with the calf bone.
Man, that might have changed things.
Probably would have.
Now, you were pretty light when you first got there. I think you were about 165 when you got to Abilene Christian. Now, you how quickly did you put on weights? And what caused all that?
I grew another 4 inches, actually, from the time I arrived at Abilene Christian. So I grew quite a bit in height. And then as far as weight, I only put on another 10 pounds, 10 to 12 pounds as far as my running weight was concerned. But that height and the body finally reaching a level where it could do a man's work for the 400 meters is what made the difference. While your body's growing, you can't do that kind of work.
Well, so tell me about the new times, okay, as a freshman?
As a freshman, I don't think I broke 48 until about 2 months after graduation.
Okay.
At a meet, Houston, at the meet of champions, I ran 46.6. So in a 13-month period, I moved from 49.6 to 46.6.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it really surprises coaches. They can't imagine that happening, but it had to do with, like I said, the body maturing and being able to handle the work, and then having a great coach to show you how to work and then wanting to work
and how to run. Yeah, those little things, the nuances, you know.
Yeah.
And the then is on the 100, you dropped down from a 10 flat to a 9.7, I believe.
Yeah, 9.6, 9.7, yeah.
And then 220, you dropped about a second.
Yeah.
So that's again, quite amazing, you know. Next year, let me see here. The next year, you went to 9.6, 20.9, and the 46.2 as sophomore. Now, let's take a look at that Olympic year, because that's right about now. 1960 Olympic year, before the Olympic glory, then you had to make the Olympic team. How tough was it on the trials for you?
Well, the way you used to make the team back in the day was you'd take the top six from the National AAU meet, the top six from the NC2A, and the top six, top three rather, from the Armed Forces meet. Mm-hmm. And those 15 would make up the two semi final races at the trials. So I got second in my first semi, and then came back in the finals, drawing lane one, and came off the curve in first place. I knew that if I was at first place coming off the curve, I knew all the rest of the runners, and I knew that the distance I had on them, I was going to make the tape before they did.
Yeah.
So Sports Illustrated had a picture of me kind of head on, I think, says grimacing Earl Young, but Paula, I wasn't grimacing. I was grinning from ear to ear because I knew I had made the U.S. Olympic team.
And by the way, let me add that there was only 90 minutes between the semifinals and the final.
That's true. Yeah.
And that's not much time to recoup, you know?
No, thing this body, fortunately, my body was built in such a way that it does recoup in short order, and right. I was in great shape.
How exciting was it for you when you crossed the finish line and knew that you were Olympian?
Paul, for a 19-year-old boy, I was the youngest gold medalist in track and field that year. I'm still the 15th youngest ever, and 2 years out of high school and you're on the Olympic team, that's
pretty amazing. Let me see here. So that year you went on to make the Olympic team and grab a gold medal in the 4x400.
Right.
And you also came in sixth in the open 400, tying the world record at sixth place, which is quite amazing. That means that everybody else must have broke the record, obviously. You know.
Yeah, it was a good time on my part, but there were five guys ahead of me. So you could say I had the best seat in the stadium for the race.
So what were some of your memories from Rome that kind of stand out as far as the opening and closing ceremonies, things like that?
Well, the opening ceremonies were much different back in the day. We actually marched in some type of uniform style rather than just a scramble. And, of course, back in the day, they had doves released, pigeons released.
Oh, that's right.
It used to be, I think, I don't know why they don't have that anymore, but it was a beautiful sight. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you had to be out there in a dark blue blazer that you didn't die, as the guy stands in front of me did. Uh-huh. But it was a beautiful ceremony. Matter of fact, on my desktop I have a picture of the stadium and the crowd marching in and all that I'm looking at right now, and it's a beautiful sight.
Brings back a lot of memories, doesn't it?
Good memories.
Yeah. So besides your events that you ran in, did you have friends running in other events that you went and watched?
Not really. We were pretty much confined. We ran seven races in 6 days. So, you know, better than half of the Olympics was taken up with my competition. So we spent a lot of time in the village, and there were some great people to meet. Guys like Cassius Clay, that was on the team at the time.
Uh-huh.
And Jerry West, who played for the Lakers for so many years.
Yeah.
Wilma Rudolph, a great female sprinter.
Right.
We had Rafer Johnson and Eddie Kaplan. We had a bunch of tremendous athletes.
Oh, that's amazing. Now, so you get your medal, and I saw it the other day. You know, you had it when we went to lunch. The last medal ever given out that had the gold leaf necklace on it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah,
it really is. It's amazing. I'm surprised you let it out of the safe.
Well, it's traveled a lot with me too, Paul. I've taken that all over the world. It's hung around the necks of presidents and prime ministers and little kids in the middle of Africa. It's had a lot of tour.
Oh, that's amazing. So you get back to Texas and you find out that you had been adopted by the state of Texas.
Yeah, Governor Price Daniel made me an honorary citizen.
Nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. Great honor.
Okay, so after this, you continued running. You got the Outstanding Athlete at the Texas Relays, which, of course, growing up in Texas, Texas Relays was it. You know, that's the biggest thing ever to happen for track and field or anything to do with running.
It was a great meet, no question about it. The only thing they did wrong was they didn't take movies or videos, so there's no recordings of the Texas Relays, which is really a mistake on their part.
Yeah. They probably had no idea to get that big as it is now. It's amazing.
Probably not.
So I talked to my buddy from Texas A&I. It's kind of his story in there. I asked him, I'm gonna talk to Earl and see if he knows any of these guys from track and field from Javelinas. Dick Watson was a hurdler. Tony Garza was a sprinter. Bob Sherry was a long jumper. Or Gerald Parmagon was a javelin thrower. Did you know any of those guys?
Yeah, I remember the names. Okay. Yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Good memory.
That's why I ask people, and I prep before I come to a meeting. Let me see here. 63 games, Pan American Games were in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And you had a pretty good little run right there.
Yeah, we won the 4x100 and the 4x400. It was a great meet, and had some, again some great names in that meet.
Uh-huh.
I think those were both Pan Am records, I think, at the time.
Oh wow, that's amazing. Now you here comes around 1964 Olympics, and you don't compete there. Why not? My name is Paul Heckman. I am the Executive Director of Memories Incorporated, an IRS-approved 501c3 nonprofit. A few years ago, we saw a niche for Facebook pages free of politics and created our first page, Memories of Dallas, which is now well over 30,000 members strong. We have expanded our Facebook pages to include Memories of Texas, Memories of Texas Football, and Memories of Texas Music. We also have actual web pages for memoriesofdallas.org, memoriesoftexas.org, memoriesoftexasfootball.org, and meminc.org, our mothership. We are working on additional web pages now. Please come see us.
Are you looking for a podcast network that talks Texas by Texans? Well, check us out. You're already listening to us, but go to the website, LoneStarPodcast.com. You can also find us on every big podcast platform, LSPN. We have shows in business, entertainment, marketing, music, of course, sports. We have some of the best sports podcasts in the state of Texas, ranging from high school football all the way up to pro basketball. So check us out online, LoneStarPodcast.com. That's the LSPN on every major podcast platform.
Here comes around 1964 Olympics, and you don't compete there. Why not?
Quite honestly, I ran out of gas. I lost my desire to run, or at least other things took precedent over them. You know, there weren't any Nike contracts back in the day, Paul. It was you had to work or have family money, whatever, to continue running.
Oh, that's something.
The armed forces was a good route to go.
Yeah.
But quite honestly, I was ready to get on in the business world. I had actually beat everyone who did make the team that year.
Uh-huh.
But you know, when your attitude doesn't change, when your attitude changes from focusing 100% on something to marginally focusing on it, you better get on with something else.
Yeah, that's true. And you kind of got on with a few other things. Earl sent me his bio, and I read it. I thought I knew a lot about Earl before, you know, between the his beginning is and his this current situation, and I had no idea. He served in the role of advisor, corporate officer, and director. Fortune 5000 companies, investment banking firms in New York, LA, Toronto, Vancouver, London. He's worked with presidents, cabinet ministers, and ambassadors. Many of the World Bank people. It's amazing. You've had negotiation with OPIC, World Bank, and USAID on their behalf. Wow. Now, first of all, what was your degree at Abilene Christian?
It was business. I did graduate work in management.
Okay.
And a general business type of degree.
So how did you make that jump from a business degree at Abilene Christian to doing all these kind of things?
It's just the way it unfolded. When I finished up my graduate work at Abilene Christian, I came to Dallas and worked for Mercantile Bank. Do you remember the old Mercantile Bank?
Sure do.
Yeah, I worked there for a year. And then Roger Pierce Securities had the first training class ever held in the state of Texas. You used to have to go to New York and be with Merrill Lynch to get your Series 7 license. And they held a class, and fortunately, I was able to get on board with them, and was with Roger Pierce, and then Rotan Mosey and Lehman Brothers when I finally got out of the securities business.
Mm-hmm.
And been involved around investment banking since then. And we had a couple of oil and gas companies that we brought public. And then I met a gentleman who introduced me to Africa and involvements over there. And from the late 90s through about 2010, I was very involved in Africa and out of Washington, as well as business in Africa. So it was quite an education. I enjoyed it. I miss Africa, but because of my being diagnosed with leukemia back in 2012, it's wise with a compromised immune system to not be running back and forth to Africa.
Yeah.
So my whole involvement is domestic now.
Sure, sure. Some of the things we want to do, we never get around to. You know, it's but you got to go to a lot of these places. The only place I've been to is the port in Monrovia, Liberia.
Right. Yeah, good time in Liberia.
You've also worked as a member of the AIDS Task Force.
Yes, that was through I was on the board of Corporate Council on Africa, which is out of Washington, D.C., and which our membership is represented by probably 95% or better of all U.S. corporations who have investment in Africa, like Exxon and IBM, et cetera. And we had a task force where we work with the State Department, actually, in rolling out HIV/AIDS programs in Africa.
Okay. Now, I see you're on the board of directors at Diamond Fields Resources. That must have been interesting.
That's a Canadian company, and that was really my introduction to Africa when they invited me to come on board. We went into the former Zaire and did business there.
Okay. And your headquarters, were you living in Vancouver then?
No, I'm living in Dallas, but
okay.
The company's headquarters were Vancouver.
Beautiful place. Love it.
Oh, yeah.
Stanley Park. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
So also, you're a director of American Studies Institute Advisory Board at Harding University. You're past president of U.S. Madagascar Business Council and president of Madagascar Health and Education Foundation. It's just quite amazing. I'm sitting here trying to let all this sink in, and I think, how many lifetimes has this guy had? You know?
Eclectic guy, isn't he? My goodness.
You're president CEO of the Madagascar World Voice, which was really interesting because that's part of the World Christian Broadcasting shortwave. You were broadcasting into the USSR, Pacific Rim, and China for over 30 years, English, Russian, and Chinese, and you also added Spanish and Portuguese. That's really amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, they're based out of Nashville and started, they had an Abilene Christian connection is the way they contacted me back in 2007, I believe it was, and wanted to have an introduction into Mauritius. Mauritius is an island in the Indian Ocean, part of the Africa.
I know exactly where it's at, yeah.
Okay, most people don't. It's a beautiful place, as you know, and
with a lot of strange animals.
Yeah. And they ended up introducing them to Madagascar, and we built a second transmitter in Madagascar, which, along with the first transmitter out of Alaska, makes it possible for them to reach actually the entire face of the earth via short wave.
Wow.
So they cover the world in short waves, as you mentioned, and in those languages you mentioned.
Right.
And it's with the objective of introducing the Bible to folks who haven't heard about it.
Wow. That's something. Also, you have, of course, you were All-American, obviously, in track and field, on the cover of Sports Illustrated, member of the Texas High School Coaches Hall of Fame, and you were inducted into the Track Hall of Fame in Texas, 2015, right?
Right, uh-huh.
Okay. And now, when we had lunch out at Stonebriar, was that part of the U.S. Olympic Alumni Association?
Yeah, we were discussing the golf event we had out there. The Dallas-Fort Worth chapter of Olympians was on one course, and my foundation, Earl Young's team, was on the other course. We're out there playing golf on day.
And we will get into that in just a second here. Let's see here. Okay, and so in 2010, Earl was diagnosed with acute myeloid. Is that how you say it? Myeloid?
Yeah, acute myeloid leukemia, AML. Yeah.
AML. And you were lucky enough. I'd say you were pretty lucky to get a bone marrow transplant. You found somebody within just a very short a few months later. They gave you 3 months to live. I know when you were diagnosed, but you didn't get your transplant till January, so you actually outlived that prognosis. And obviously now have really kind of blown it away. and that prompted you to do the Earl Young's team, didn't it?
Yeah, I started 6 years ago. We started Earl Young's team, a foundation focused on increasing awareness and registering bone marrow donors.
Okay.
And we focus on, most generally, we focus on universities, faith-based universities, because it's convenient. Usually with my background, we can get a speaking slot at chapel.
Sure.
And that way I can explain to the entire student body what a transplant's all about, which most people have no clue. So it works well for us. We've registered over 18,000 potential donors, and we've had at least I'm looking at a new report, but I know at least 66 people have given a chance at life because of our work.
Isn't that amazing? You know, I mean, some people go through life and they never get the chance to save anyone's life. Other people might get one or maybe two or maybe three in a bad car wreck or something like that, but you've already saved 66 people.
Well, thank you for looking at it that way. I tend to see it from the other side, because if it hadn't have been for Christine Wag, out of Offenbach, Germany, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation.
And she's the one that gave you the bone marrow.
Well, not only that, Paul, she was the only match out of 22 million.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the point I'd like your listeners to pay attention to. That is that only 4 out of 10 people diagnosed with a blood cancer that could have continued life from a transplant find a match.
Oh.
6 people and don't find a match.
Right.
And they die.
Oh, my gosh.
That's why it's important that people become registered. Chance of them being called is slim, but that one chance could save a life of a guy that's 71, as I was at the time, or an infant, a newborn, who's never experienced what we've experienced in life. It's a big deal. It's a big deal, and it's called saving lives. That's exactly what's done by people that stand up and register that they will be available should a person need a bone marrow transplant.
Yes, exactly. By the way, that website for his program is www.earlyoungsteam. That's earlyoungsteam.com. Earl Young's team. I know we've had several lunches together, and we haven't really had a chance to talk about that, but it's quite amazing. How can a university ask you to come by and do your presentation?
Well, actually, I contact the universities, and it's kind of like so many things, Paul, it's a network. I started with Abilene Christian, and then there are about 10 Church of Christ universities, and it was easy for me to recall to them who I am, and started with those, and now it's branched out. I guess we were involved with well over 100 different universities. And it's the type of thing, when you work with a university on a project like this, you can go back every year, because freshmen are coming in every year. And what we're looking for are donors who are 18 to 55, but let's face it, especially those 18 to 30, before the cells have really begun to break down. The good, healthy cells are in that age crowd.
Oh, darn. I can't help.
So,
yeah, I'm way past that one, but
yeah, I don't want you anymore, Paul. Thanks anyway. But
yeah. I told my mom, give my body to science, but I don't think they'll want any of it. get the titanium out of all the rods and stuff from me breaking bones. But if they did want to contact you, they'd simply go to EarlYoungsTeam.com and they could get hold of you through there, correct?
Oh, you bet. And if anybody wants to be a donor, we will FedEx the three swabs. It's very simple, Paul. They swab the inside of their cheek. They fill out a very short registration form, put that in an envelope, send it back to us. We send it to the lab. The lab posts it in the international registry.
Okay.
And if anyone would like to have a kit to swab or wants to talk about it, just go to my website, contact me, and we'll take care of it that way.
Okay. All right.
So there's no money involved at all either way.
I'm going to pass this on to some friends down at Baylor University, and maybe we can set something up there.
Okay. Sounds good.
Now, Earl, we've had lunch several times at the Olympian Luncheon, so thanks to Sammy Walker, by the way, for dragging me along. Sammy, of course, was also an Olympian. He came in ninth in weightlifting, set the high school record for the shot put, I think, 12 times. So he's quite an amazing athlete himself. But Dorothy Freeney had already passed away by the time I got there. Tell me a little bit about Dorothy.
Dorothy was a wonderful lady. Dorothy was in the 36 Olympics. Excuse me, 32 Olympics. She was a speed skater in Placid.
Uh-huh.
And then moved to Dallas and actually used to have an ice show in the Adolphus Hotel, believe it or not.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, just a great friend, great lady. We actually created the beginning of the Olympic Alumni Association right here in Dallas around her dining room table. We've had a great chapter here being led by Sammy now. I was president just prior to Sammy, and Thane Baker, the great sprinter, was president prior to me. But Dorothy was very inspirational and more than inspirational. The alumni organization of the U.S. Olympians exists today because of her dream.
Oh, it's amazing. That's amazing. Earl, I really thank you for all your time here. It's been really eye-opening. You don't get to talk to a gold medalist every day. there's people that you think they were, but...
Especially one this old. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you're well-preserved.
There you go.
Hey, I want to thank Paul Heckman for sharing that meeting he had. As always, we have to thank our sponsors, Toothacres Pet Care Center. For all your boarding needs, choose Toothacres, because Toothacres cares. And I also want to thank you, the listener, for giving us your time and attention. Share these shows out on all your social media and help us preserve memories of Dallas. Until next time, I'm your host, Chris Daly, reminding you that the best thing about memories is making them. So go out and make some memories.